Sabhavatana Sarashiro Mani Kevalaya Nanda Kanda Sabhavatana Sarashiro Mani Kevalaya Nanda Kanda Vaja Vaja Vai Chaitanya Nitai Sudhridha Vishvasa Kori Vaja Vaja Vai Chaitanya Nitai Sudhridha Vishvasa Kori Vishaya Chariya Sera Semajiya Mukevalo Hari Hari Vishaya Chariya Sera Semajiya Mukevalo Hari Hari Dekare vai Tribhuvane nai Amona dayala data Dekare vai Tribhuvane nai Amona dayala data Pashu Paki Jure Pachana Vidare Shune Jara Gunagata Pashu Paki Jure Pachana Vidare Shune Jara Gunagata Sangshare majiya rohile pariya sephare nahilo asha Sangshare majiya rohile pariya sephare nahilo asha Apana karma bunjaye shamana kohoye lo chanadana 아픈 걸음아 문자에 샤마나 코일로 찬다사 바람아 카르나 아훈디 전하 니타이고라 찬다 샤바바타라 샤르시로마니 케발라야 난다칸다 케발라야 난다칸다 Kevalaya Nanda Kanda Shilo Chandas Thakur Ki Jai Shishi Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. We have Prabhupada's purport to this song. Straight translation there. Which one should we read? Okay. This is a song by Lochandas Thakur. Pahu means Lord, and Dwijana means two. Lochandas Thakur declares that the two lords, Nitai Gaurachandra, Lord Nitai and Lord Chaitanya, are very merciful, Parama Karuna. Shava avatara sara shiromani. Avatara means incarnation and sava means all. They are the essence of all incarnations. The specific significance of these incarnations is that they prosecute their way of self-realization. Is that prosecuting their way of self-realization is simply joyful. Kevala ananda. For they introduce chanting and dancing. There are many incarnations like Lord Rama and even Krishna, the Tattva of the Gita, which requires knowledge and understanding. But Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda introduced a process that is simply joyful. Simply chant and dance. Therefore, Lochandas requests everyone, Bhajo bhajo bhai Chaitanya Nitai, my dear brother, I request that you just worship Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda with firm conviction and faith. Don't think that this chanting and dancing will not lead to the desired goal. It will. It is the assurance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that one will get all perfection by this process. Therefore, one must chant with firm faith and conviction. Bishwas Kori. But what is the process? The process is Bishaya Charya Sherase Majya. If one wants to be Krishna conscious by this process, one has to give up his engagement in sense gratification. That is the only restriction. If one gives up sense gratification, it is sure that he will reach the desired goal. Mukhe Bolo Hari Hari. One simply has to chant Hare Krishna, Hari Hari, without any motive of sense gratification. Dakka ore bhai tri bhuvane nai. Lochandas Thakur says, my dear brother, you just try to examine this. Within the three worlds, there is no one like Lord Chaitanya or Lord Nityananda, because their merciful qualities are so great that they make even birds and beasts cry. What to speak of human beings? Actually, when Lord Chaitanya passed through the forest known as Jharikanda, the tigers, elephants, snakes, deer, and all other animals joined him in chanting Hare Krishna. It is so nice that anyone can join. Even the animals can join. What to speak of human beings? Of course, it is not possible for ordinary men to induce animals to chant. But if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could inspire animals to chant, at least we can encourage human beings to adopt this path of Hare Krishna mantra chanting. It is so nice that even the most stone-hearted man will be melted. Pashana means stone. It is so nice that even stone will melt. But Lochandas Thakur regrets that he is entrapped by sense gratification. He addresses himself, "My dear mind, you are entrapped in the sense gratification process and you have no attraction for chanting Hare Krishna. Since you have no attraction for the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, what can I say? I can simply think of my misfortune. Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, is punishing me by not allowing me to be attracted by this movement." So, Lochandas Thakur ki jai. We may say a few more words about him later. I think we'll proceed with Chaitanya Charitamrita now. Well, we can leave it here. Why not? This is fine. It's okay. Why not? Chaitanya Charitamrita. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Today we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. This is Adi Lila, chapter 11, the expansions of Lord Nityananda. We'll begin with text number 9. Translations and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay, let's chant this. Can we? Should we do the word for word first? Yes. Okay. Ishvara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ha-iya, being. Kahai, calls himself. Mahabhagavata, great devotee. Veda Dharma, the principles of Vedic religion. Adita, transcendental. Hanya, being. Veda Dharma, in the Vedic system. Rata, engaged. Ishvara haiya kahai mahabhagavata. Ishvara haiya kahai mahabhagavata. Veda dharma tita haiya veda dharma rata. Veda dharma tita haya veda dharma rata. Ishvara haya kahai mahabhagavata. Veda dharma tita haya veda dharma rata. So these verses are discussing about Virabhadra Prabhu. Translation: although Virabhadra Gosai was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he presented himself as a great devotee, and although the Supreme Godhead is transcendental to all Vedic injunctions, he strictly followed the Vedic rituals. We'll continue a few more verses, and with verse 13 we have Prabhupada's purport. Antare ishara cheshta bahire nirdambha chaitana bhakti mandapete ho mulashtambha. He, Virabhadra, is the main pillar in the hall of devotional service erected by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He knew within himself that he acted as the Supreme Lord Vishnu, but externally he was prideless. Ajapi jahara kripa mahima haite chaitana nitananda gai shakala jagate. It is by the glorious mercy of Sri Virabhadra Gosai that people all over the world now have the chance to chant the names of Chaitanya and Nityananda. Jai Ho. Se Virabhadra Gosair La Inu Sharana Jahara Prasade Hoy Abhishta Purano. I therefore take shelter of the lotus feet of Virabhadra Gosai, so that by his mercy, my great desire to write Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita will be properly guided. Sri Ramadasa Ara Godadharadasa Chaitanya Gosayir Bhaktara Hetara Bhasha. Two devotees of Lord Chaitanya, named Sri Ramdas and Gadadhar Das, always lived with Sri Virabhadra Gosai. Purport: Sri Ramdas, later known as Abhiram Thakur, was one of the 12 Gopalas, or cowherd boyfriends, of Sri Nityananda Prabhu. The Gauranadesha Deepika 126 states that Sri Ramdas was formerly Sri Dama. In the Bhakti Ratnakara fourth wave, there is a description of Srila Abhiram Thakur. By the order of Sri Nityananda Prabhu, Abhiram Thakur became a great acharya and preacher of the Chaitanya cult of devotional service. He was a very influential personality, and non-devotees were very much afraid of him. Empowered by Sri Nityananda Prabhu, he was always in ecstasy and was extremely kind to all fallen souls. It is said that if he offered obeisance to any stone other than Shalagram Shila, it would immediately fracture. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur writes in his Anubhasha, and now the remainder of this purport is in quotations, he's translating from his Bengali commentary to Chaitanya Charitamrita. 10 miles southwest, we're going to get some geography lesson here. 10 miles southwest of the Champadanga railway station on the narrow gauge railway line from Howrah in Calcutta to Amta, a village in the Hooghly district, is a small town named Kanakula Krishnanagar, where the temple in which Abhiram Thakur worshipped is situated. During the rainy season, when this area is inundated with water, people must go there by another line, which is now called the Southeastern Railway. On this line, there's a station named Golaghata, from which one has to go by steamer to Ranichako. 7.5 miles north of Ranichako is Kanakula. The temple where Abhiram Thakur worshipped is situated in Krishnanagar, which is near the Kula, or bank, of the Kana, Dwarakeshwara River. Therefore, this place is celebrated as Kana Kula Krishnanagar. Outside of the temple is a bakul tree. This place is known as Siddha Bakul Kunj. It is said that when Abhiram Thakur came there, he sat down under this tree. In Kana Kula Krishnanagar, there is a big fair held every year in the month of Chaitra, March, April, on the Krishna Saptami, the seventh day of the dark moon. Many hundreds and thousands of people gather for this festival. The temple where Abhiram Thakur worshipped has a very old history. The deity in the temple is known as Gopinath. There are many Saivite families living near the temple. It is said that Abhiram Thakur had a whip, and that whoever he touched with it would immediately become an elevated devotee of Krishna. Among his many disciples, Sriman Srinivas Acharya was the most famous and the most dear, but it is doubtful that he was his initiated disciple. Okay. So we have a bit of description of Virabhadra Gosai to begin with. He's known also as Virachandra from, as far as I can tell from my research. Sometimes this is confusing, speaking very generally now. It's one reason that historians have trouble piecing together details of the history of our tradition, because it's often the case that you'll have more than one person with the same name. You know, Haridas. How many Haridases have there been? Doubtless in many, many Haridases, Krishnadases. There are so many Krishnadases, and so on. And this applies to so many names. And it leads me to wonder if the Srinivas mentioned here is the same Srinivas Thakur that we are familiar with, because Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur does raise this doubt. He is known as an elevated disciple. Sorry, among the disciples of which one of Abhiram Thakur is Srinivas, and then the issue is raised: is it a initiate, a Diksha disciple, or a Shiksha disciple? One might also raise the question: is it the same Srinivas who we know to be the disciple of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, as far as I understand, the Diksha disciple of Gopal Bhatta, but I may be corrected on that. So, this kind of confusion can come sometimes. In any case, Virabhadra Gosai is also known as Virachandra, and he is a son of Nityananda Prabhu. And it's interesting how the two are related here. There is mention of Ram Das, who is then later known as Abhiram Das, or sometimes he's known as Ram Das Abhiram Das. Ram Das Abhiram. Again, several names. And that is common in India, in other cultures as well, I believe, that someone will have more than one name. You have nicknames. We perhaps also have had nicknames given to us by different family members. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also had nicknames. What was his famous nickname? Nimai Pandit. Who gave him that name? Was it Advaita Acharya's wife? He'll be protected. As, yes. So for the sake of protecting Mahaprabhu, protecting, what was his official name? Vishvambar. We sometimes forget that he grew up as Vishvambar officially. Nimai, and then he became Nimai Pandit. So he, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then only much later when he took sannyas, he became Chaitanya, and then after that he became known as Mahaprabhu. Not the only one to be known as Mahaprabhu, I should add that the followers of Vallabhacharya refer to him also as Mahaprabhu. So don't be shocked if you meet a follower of the Vallabha Sampradaya and they're referring to their Acharya as Mahaprabhu. But here Ramdas is mentioned, and he is also some allusion, some hint is here about some of his pastimes, which apparently are referred to at greater length by others. I did a bit of looking on Sri Internet, and it seems that Ramdas Abhiram had a disciple named Ram Tilak. Sorry, Tilak Ramdas, who wrote a book called the Abhiram Lilamrita. And in that Abhiram Lilamrita, I don't know, I didn't have time to do any further looking to see how much this text is accepted as authoritative. But the story is known from it that Abhiram would go to visit Nityananda Prabhu and his wife as soon as one of their children would take birth, wanting to see what this wonderful child must be, and then offering obeisance to the child. But when he would offer obeisance, what would happen? The child would die. Imagine how the mother feels. Imagine how the father feels when one son after another. The source I read did not tell how many. Another source I read said seven. Have you read that? Seven? Six children, one after another, met this fate, which of course we have to understand is the blessing of Abhiram Thakur to immediately go back home, back to Godhead. So it's not a source of lamentation from that perspective. But still, when it came time for the seventh child, I guess we have to say, to appear, then mother and father naturally were hesitant to invite this fellow again for the occasion of the samskara, whatever the samskara was after the birth. What is that samskara called? Jati. Okay, the jati kar, not jati karan, jati. Jato in Bengal, yes. Right. So in fact, according to this account, Nityananda Prabhu made a lot of arrangements so that Abhiram Thakur would not come. First of all, he did not invite him. But not only did he not invite him, he told the boatsman, because Abhiram lived on the other side of the Ganga, they told the boatsman, he told everyone, if Abhiram comes, do not ferry him across. Meanwhile, the word came to Abhiram that another child had been born to Nityananda, and he became very excited and eager to go. But at the same time, he felt, I have not been invited, and it would not be proper for me to go if I'm not invited, so I won't. But another devotee, and I need help remembering the name, one local devotee urged him to go, that if you don't go, how can this ceremony be complete? You are so dear to this family. You must go. If you are not present, it will not be possible. You have to go. So he urged him. Finally, he thought, well, let's see what we can do. He went to the bank of the Ganga. He approached one of the boatmen. The boatman said, what is your name? Well, I'm Abhiram. Everyone knows I'm Abhiram. I am very sorry, but we are under instruction not to ferry you across. Oh, please, you know, you have to. I will pay you. What is the problem? No, we cannot take you. And so the story goes, the boatman actually sank his boat on the spot so that there could be no more argument on the side of Aviram. In fact, one boatman after another said, "Your name, sir?" "Aviram." "No." Sinking boat, one after another. They all went on strike. We know about taxi strikes in India. Well, this was a boatman strike. So what did Aviram do? We are told he simply took his upper cloth, spread it out on the water, and miraculously paddled across on his cloth. And showed up, sure enough, here he was, despite all of Nityananda Prabhu's efforts. Here was Aviram Thakur. And of course, when he arrived, what could they do but welcome him with great welcome and great respect? They felt happiness. They had mixed feelings, really, you know, because for them, Aviram Thakur, a great exalted devotee, was also very dear to them. So they received him very nicely and they fed him. And it seems that Aviram had, among other characteristics, a very great appetite. And so he ate and he continued to eat and he continued to eat whatever they gave him until there was nothing left for the feast to be served to everyone else. But there was some sense that this might be a problem. He understood the feelings and he said, what are you worried about? Go look in the pots. So they looked in the pots. They were all full again. Yeah, so no problem. At that point, the issue came up. Aviram said, "So, a son has been born to you. Let me see this wonderful son of yours. Let me, I want to offer obeisance." "Oh, please. Just now coming, excuses. But no. He insisted. And everyone held their breath. You can imagine, after six sons, one after another, back home, back to Godhead, you know, instant back to Godhead program. They weren't into that anymore. So they were in quite some anxiety. You can imagine them holding their breath as Aviram sees his child and then goes with his head to the floor offering obeisance. But he stood up, he got up again, and the child did not die. Harivo, harivo, harivo. And which child was that? Seventh was Ganga Devi. Oh. All right, that means there are different versions. Because the version I read is saying that this is none other than Virabhadra. Okay. There we go. In any case, Mother Ganga survived, Virabhadra both survived. Why? Because they are who they are. And that is, you can say, the prevailing point that Krishnadas Kaviraj is making in these verses. He's saying that Virabhadra is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is in Goroganodesha Deepika that he is identified with. Who is it? Kshirodakashayi Vishnu, I believe. So, Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's mentioned here, but how is he acting? He is acting as a devotee. What sort of devotee? It says here, Mahabhagavata. Now, in the translation, It says, although Virabhadra Gosai was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he presented himself as a great devotee. Now the phrasing here would suggest something that we might wonder about. We might wonder, well, wait a minute, does a great devotee present himself as a great devotee? I always thought that a great devotee presents himself as a humble devotee, not as a great devotee. In any case, the phrasing in the Bengali simply is saying, Ishvara hoyat kahai mahabhagavata. He is a mahabhagavata. And how is he acting? Veda dharma tita. Although he is beyond Veda dharma, the regulations, Veda dharma roto. He follows Vedic dharma. So his greatness, it's not that he's advertising himself. I think that's not the idea here. He's not advertising himself as a great devotee, but he is acting as a great devotee. And this is his greatness, that although he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is following the dharma, the Vedic dharma of a devotee. Okay. Back to this location, we read here these details about how to get to the place of Aviram. And this is one of the interesting features of this section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita in general. Most of it taken, as far as I know, from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary to Chaitanya Charitamrita. Much, in fact, of our Srila Prabhupada's commentary to Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's simply translating what Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur wrote in his Bengali. And it's interesting that Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur felt it was important to write all these details. Why did he write this? He wanted that devotees go to these places. He wanted to make it easy for them. Okay, such and such place is there. How do I get there? Well, here's how you get there. You get on this train and you stop at that stop and you take a rickshaw, you know, three doors past the post office, and you turn left and you ask Mr. So-and-so, and if he's not there, then, you know, and so on. So he's giving that detail because he wanted that the community of devotees which had been established by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued to be recognized as such. In many of these purports, he will tell about the descendants of the particular person, follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he's referring to. He'll give several generations to make the point that this tradition is going on, that these families are still there, that the community of devotees is still very much alive and spread in this geographical area. They are real people who are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and who are worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I remember some years ago I visited Bangladesh, and myself and a couple of godbrothers, we made a point to try to go to places. A few, we didn't have a lot of time. We went to a few places associated with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers. One of the places we went to was a town or village called Dakadakin, which is in kind of northeastern Bangladesh. And this is the place where the Mishra family comes from, where Jagannath Mishra and the family of Jagannath Mishra, where they originally lived before they migrated to Navadvip. So we went there and we were very happy to see that there are descendants of who knows how the connection exactly goes, but some kind of descendants of that family are still there, and they are still practicing Krishna consciousness, as we say. They had a little temple there. It was very encouraging for us to see this. And they were very happy to see us. It was a kind of mutual feeling of enlivenment that not only is this happening in its original places, the practice of culture of the cult, sometimes Srila Prabhupada would say, the cult of Lord Chaitanya, not only is it happening there, it is happening all over the world, and we are one big family which is expanding. And we managed to go to other places. I'm forgetting the name of the town at the moment, but we attended Arati in not a village, really a city, in an area where there are many Vaishnavas in Bangladesh. And it was evening Arati time, and we came there just as the Arati was beginning. It was a small temple. It was really a family temple. In fact, there was, we found out later, one man and his sister were the only people there managing this temple. But when we came there, then they were so excited to see devotees coming from the West. After the Arati, they dropped everything. They ran out to the nearest sweet shop and bought some sweets and brought and offered to the deities and distributed to us. And immediately it was like a mini festival. They were just so happy. And we went from there to another place and another place, all in the same neighborhood where the evening arati was being performed to deities of Gornitai. So Saraswati Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to encourage devotees to go to these places on pilgrimage and to pay respects to the residents of these places, the descendants, and also to remember and offer respects to these immediate disciples of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It struck me at that time, and it has struck me on later occasions, that it is a point worth reflecting on, how we have two kinds of family in spiritual life. We have the family which is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita within these chapters of devotees and their disciples. And in this and previous chapters, Krishnadas Kaviraj is likening this family to a family tree. He gives a typical analogy of a tree with many branches. We also notice, though, that as we read about these followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're also reading about seminal families. We're reading about fathers who have sons. We don't read so much about daughters, but fathers or parents and their sons who are then identified as great devotees. So the idea of family is there in both cases, and we know from history that some of these seminal family lines, the Nityananda Vamsha and the Advaita Vamsha, have continued down over the generations, and they continue to have their families. And we know that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was critical of these families. He referred to this as Vaishnava Santana, or the seminal family lines, identifying oneself as a Vaishnava because one's ancestor is one of the immediate followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur is critical of this because of its misuse. He saw that some of these followers were not following in a strict sense. They were claiming rights. They were claiming qualification on the basis of being who they were from birth, and not much beyond that or anything beyond that. And so he preached quite vigorously against this for good reason. What I want to suggest is that we recognize the other side of the situation, and that is that there are also family members of the descendants from these lines who are serious devotees. It may not be the case for all of them, but I have had occasion to meet some of them who one has to appreciate are indeed serious devotees, taking seriously their good fortune of being born into one or another of these families. So I think we have to be a little careful when encountering a family member of a descendant of one of these families, thinking to what Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says, taking that to heart, that one is not automatically saying this person has the qualification, but at the same time giving the benefit of the doubt that indeed this may be the case. We had a discussion about this in Radhadesh a couple of months ago in our course that we're teaching on Vaishnava Vedanta, and we had a discussion about our disciplic succession and some of the, you can say, complexities of the disciplic succession. And then we talked about this perspective or this dimension of disciplic succession where you have Vaishnava Santana, you have families. And this led to an interesting point that came up by, in fact, one of your family members here, one of your younger members who is now a student there. She pointed out that some of the second generation don't feel inclined to take initiation. Why? Because, and this is in the words of a young devotee who is in touch with the younger generation more than some of us would be, because they feel, I am a Gurukuli, I am a second generation, my parents are devotees, I'm born into it. I don't need initiation. Why bother? So I thought that's an interesting perspective. We might be seeing the beginnings of something developing in a way that we might not have expected. For better or worse, we'll have to see. But I just thought I'd open that as some thoughts for possible reflection, possible discussion as well. I'll stop there. If there's any discussion, we can for a few minutes. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai. Yes, from.
Please forgive me because I have a tendency to have a very analytical, critical mind. But it's not that I don't, appreciate everything you've said. When you presented several points in the word etymology, such as how you interpret that, it says that Srinivasacharya might not be his disciple, and then you were saying that might be a different Srinivasacharya. The way I see things, the way it's written, is just on a very simple level. It is what it means. And it means that we don't know whether Srinivasacharya was a disciple or not.
Yeah.
Srila Prabhupada didn't say it in there. It could have been another.
No, I don't want to push that point. All I wanted to say was that there are confusions about various identities, and I don't want to unnecessarily confuse us. I'm just saying that sometimes there are points of contention. Who was this person? Who was that person?
That's accepted.
That's all. I certainly don't want to suggest.
And then the other thing is like presenting, how you interpret that word presenting. It's it's saying in there, presenting himself as a great devotee, like Lord Chaitanya presented himself as a great devotee.
Right.
And he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It didn't, the word presenting, you know, it's not necessary to give a psychological implication. Like presenting like,
right, yeah.
I'm presenting myself as a great devotee, but actually yeah. I'm a non-devotee.
Yeah.
It just means that's how he appeared.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... But I think we're saying the same thing. Yeah, I'm not trying to counter anything like that.
And then the other point was shiksha and diksha. You made a distinction, or it seemed the way that I interpreted what you were saying is that you made a distinction between shiksha and diksha guru. And actually, shiksha and diksha guru are the same. They're
yeah.
the same, and
yeah.
we can see in Krishnadas Kaviraj, his Diksha Guru is Lord Nityananda, but in every chapter he lists Rupa and Raghunath as being his gurus.
Right.
They were his Shiksha Guru, but because they had more, they gave him more association, and he was getting more from them, he listed them as his gurus. Same in the case with Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, whose Diksha Guru is... right now.
Your point is well taken. When I made the distinction, I wasn't trying to make a distinction in terms of quality. I'm only making a distinction. I mean, we do have two different words, and we do make some kind of distinction. And I'm just saying that it seems that Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur is making that distinction. He's not using the word diksha. He's not using the word shiksha. But, we'd have to see in the Bengali, because, again, Prabhupada is translating from Bengali. One could look and see what that is. But what we have here is simply, among his many disciples, Sriman Srinivasacharya was the most famous and the most dear, but it is doubtful that he was his initiated disciple. Very likely, and I'm guessing, Bhaktisiddhanta used the term diksha in that last phrase. Certainly not to say one is, you know, higher or lower. That's another point.
A great misunderstanding between shiksha and diksha guru. I don't mean to be critical, but I really feel that in ISKCON we really don't understand the real
importance
of shiksha and diksha guru.
Yeah. I think we're working on it, though. I think we're getting there gradually. We might not get it all at once. It might take us some time, but I think... I agree. I think we want to clarify that. But I think that's a whole other discussion, I think.
Yeah, here's another whole discussion. I think that there's a proper etiquette when we're sitting and hearing a class, Bhagavatam class, Chaitanya Charitamrita class, and that although questions are important and subject matters that we bring up in the questions are relevant, I think we have to be a little bit, like you said, your mind's a little critical. Well, I think that needs to be checked a bit. We need to check ourselves, all of us, and we need to hear and not have some burning question in our mind that prevents us from hearing the complete class and context. I know there are sannyasis that come here, and probably they don't experience it just here, but they experience it everywhere, that when they give a class, immediately when they ask a question, someone shoots up their hand, and they have something that's obviously been on their mind, and sort of it might have been the first thing out of their mouth. Just for example here, that was one of the first things he said in his class, and obviously that was on your mind. And I think we need to be a little careful in questioning and commenting in class where it doesn't appear that it's kind of like almost an attack on the speaker, or an assumption that the speaker has meant this when they said that, and then we get into a whole discussion where all this clarification has to go on. I mean, those kind of questions can be asked to the speaker after class, but I think that there's a certain etiquette in the class where, again, not that, you know, incorrect philosophical points or political points are made and they're not questioned, but still there has to be a little bit of etiquette in the class that doesn't get into like a lot of political questioning and even harsh speech that sometimes goes on in discussions in a forum like this. I think that we need some thoughtfulness in this way. So that's why, and this is not the first time I felt this way, you know, about a situation. So I'm not picking on you. I know you. I'm not talking about you in particular. I mean, it comes up in this circumstance, but there are many circumstances when this comes up, you know. And I think that in the etiquette of a situation like this, we have to be a little aware of it, and act appropriately. That's all. I just want to add that.
Thank you. Nice comment.
Thank you. This is not a challenging question. That clear. But I wanted to refer to this wonderful song you sang,
Paramakaruna. Yeah.
Because Srila Prabhupada came to Atlanta in 1975.
Oh, that's where he...
Yeah, I was there.
He became very emotional singing.
Very nice, song. Yes. I was relating this to this devotee here, Srila Prabhupada. Sang nicely and became emotional, yes. So it's a wonderful song for those of us who may want to research it further. If you have the MP3s, it's there. But he sang a different tune than you did. And I was so nostalgic about it. And you sang it, but I sang the tune Prabhupada sang. Krishna.
Thank you, yes. Let's get Prabhu behind. Yes, you're looking eager. Yes, I'm forgetting names again. Prangovinda, yes.
Just mentioning that this is the first time I heard interesting point of the Seminole dynasty, because I was also actually disturbed one time when I heard Prabhupada was very grave voice he sang. So, just like in Bengal they say Nityananda Bangsha. This is not correct. So then when you put it way or positive way, it's very interesting because I myself with one time with Nadia Gokulananda, you might know the old British came Nityananda Bangsha follower or whatever from the West, and their claim was that Gopijana Vallabh and Ramakrishna and Ramachandra, the three disciple of Mother our Birchanda Prabhu or Birbhadra Prabhu, they claim that this is his children, sons, three sons. Because they claim he married daughter of Jodhanandan Chakravarti, Srimati and Narayani. And Prabhupada blasted twice in his lecture, I heard it, that Birchanda Prabhu was a brahmachari.
Oh.
He never married. So the so-called Bengalis, they claim that he was married. Seminole descendant is following. So that was a very heavy point, and I was thinking, like, I follow Prabhupada, I follow Bhakti Siddhanta Sri Thakur, so I have to keep up the same mood. That's why Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur gives more details that how Ramakrishna's or Ramachandra's descendant till today exist, but they're not seminal of Nityananda Bangsha.
Yeah, you get lots of... So many things like that are contested in so many ways. But
I think like the Kanakul Krishna Nagar, I'm glad Krishna Thakur or Prabhupada translated, because there is so many. Mayapur is Krishna Nagar, right?
Yeah. I looked up. Apparently, this one is 90 kilometers west of Calcutta or Hooghly. So it's pretty far toward the west of West Bengal, apparently. Yeah. Interesting. Yes. Hmm.
to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta to be initiated by someone else, hmm. you know, by Guru Kishodas Prabhuji. So in that way, although you're mentioning about our Gurukuli,
yes.
I was thinking how he's, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sets a good example in two ways, encouraging his son to be initiated, and yet not by him, so that Vansha, you know, we're talking about.
Right.
So it's almost like gives it to somebody else, so to speak, all those.
Yeah, very nice point. Other Tulsi Priya.
On that note, I would like to ask you to make some comments based on an experience that I had with one of the second generation. I was a teacher briefly in the girls' ashram, and I made some friendships with some of them, and one of them confided to me, which maybe it's not such a secret thing, but she says that the kids will get together, and they'll ask, "Are you a 50-rounder?" And no, I'm not a 50-rounder. And one girl thought for years she was a 50-rounder and found out she wasn't, and she was very disappointed. And sometimes I would see a complacency in them because they would have this attitude that they were born devotees. And I said, devotees are not born, they're made. And I wonder if that's a true statement or not. If a devotee can be maybe great exalted soul can be, but if in general can a devotee be born, or are they all made?
In the case of Virabhadra, he seems to be born not only a devotee, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. As far as the rest of us goes, I think we understand much more on the other, you know, we put the emphasis on the other side. We want to become devotees. Of course, in a very absolute sense, you can say, you know, go to the other extreme and say everyone is a devotee. The spirit soul is eternal servant of Krishna. But that, for what, you know, the level we want to talk on is maybe not so telling. I completely agree with your comment, with the message behind it. Namely, we have to qualify ourselves, and we want everyone to feel that it is not automatic. That said, I think we can also acknowledge that those who are born into a devotee family have an advantage if they take the advantage. And we all know the example Prabhupada gave of the high court judge. You're not born a high court judge. You become qualified a high court judge. But if you're born in the family of a high court judge, you have a very good head start toward becoming a high court judge. I think that's the understanding we have. Okay, good. I think we'll discuss afterwards. Stop there. Thank you very much indeed. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.